Maya and Max, Charlotte and Jimena, August and Jack. She pointed to us when she said this. Miles and Amos, Julian and Henry, Savannah and... I didn't hear the rest. Huh? I said. The bell rang. So, don't forget to get together with your partners to choose a project from the list, guys, said Ms. Rubin as everyone started taking off. I looked up at August, but he had already put his backpack on and was practically out the door. I must have had a stupid look on my face, because Julian came over and said, Looks like you and your best bud are partners. He was smirking when he said this. I hated him so much right then. Hello, Earth to Jack Will, he said when I didn't answer him. Shut up, Julian. I was putting my loose-leaf binder away in my backpack and just wanted him away from me. You must be so bummed you got stuck with him, he said. You should tell Miss Rubin you want to switch partners. I bet she'd let you. No, she wouldn't, I said. Ask her. No, I don't want to. Miss Rubin, Julian said, turning around and raising his hand at the same time. Miss Rubin was erasing the chalkboard at the front of the room. She turned when she heard her name. No, Julian, I whisper screamed. What is it, boys? She said impatiently. Could we switch partners if we wanted to? Said Julian, looking very innocent. Me and Jack had this science fair project idea we wanted to work on together. Well, I guess we could arrange that, she started to say. No, it's okay, Ms. Rubin, I said quickly, heading out the door. Bye! Julian ran after me. Why'd you do that? He said, catching up to me at the stairs. We could have been partners. You don't have to be friends with that freak if you don't want to be, you know. And that's when I punched him. Right in the mouth. Detention. Some things you just can't explain. You don't even try. You don't know where to start. All your sentences would jumble up like a giant knot if you open your mouth. Any words you used would come out wrong. Jack, this is very, very serious, Mr. Tushman was saying. I was in his office, sitting on a chair across from his desk and looking at this picture of a pumpkin on the wall behind him. Kids get expelled for this kind of thing, Jack. I know you're a good kid, and I don't want that to happen. But you have to explain yourself. This is so not like you, Jack, said Mom. She had come from work as soon as they had called her. I could tell she was going back and forth between being really mad and really surprised. I thought you and Julian were friends, said Mr. Tushman. We're not friends, I said. My arms were crossed in front of me. But to punch someone in the mouth, Jack? Said Mom, raising her voice. I mean, what were you thinking? She looked at Mr. Tushman. Honestly, he's never hit anyone before. He's just not like that. Julian's mouth was bleeding, Jack, said Mr. Tushman. You knocked out a tooth. Did you know that? It was just a baby tooth, I said. Jack, said Mom, shaking her head. That's what Nurse Molly said. You're missing the point, Mom yelled. I just want to know why, said Mr. Tushman, raising his shoulders. It'll just make everything worse, I sighed. Just tell me, Jack. I shrugged, but I didn't say anything. I just couldn't. If I told him that Julian had called August a freak, then he'd go talk to Julian about it. Then Julian would tell him how I had badmouthed August too, and everybody would find out about it. Jack, said Mom. I started to cry. I'm sorry. Mr. Tushman raised his eyebrows and nodded, but he didn't say anything. Instead, he kind of blew into his hands like you do when your hands are cold. Jack, he said. I don't really know what to say here. I mean, you punched a kid. We have rules about that kind of thing, you know. Automatic expulsion. And you're not even trying to explain yourself. I was crying a lot by now, and the second Mom put her arms around me, I started to bawl. Let's, said Mr. Tushman, taking his glasses off to clean them. Let's do this, Jack. We're out for winter break as of next week anyway. How about you stay home for the rest of this week, and then after winter break, you'll come back and everything will be fresh and brand new. Clean slate, so to speak.
Am I being suspended?
I sniffled. Well, he said, shrugging. Technically, yes. But it's only for a couple of days. And I'll tell you what. While you're at home, you take the time to think about what's happened. And if you want to write me a letter explaining what happened, and a letter to Julian apologizing, then we won't even put any of this in your permanent record, okay? You go home and talk about it with your mom and dad. And maybe in the morning, you'll figure it all out a bit more.
That sounds like a good plan, Mr. Tushman, said Mom, nodding. Thank you.
Everything is going to be okay, said Mr. Tushman, walking over to the door, which was closed. I know you're a nice kid, Jack, and I know that sometimes even nice kids do dumb things, right?
He opened the door.
Thank you for being so understanding, said Mom, shaking his hand at the door.
No problem. He leaned over and told her something quietly that I couldn't hear.
I know. Thank you, said Mom, nodding.
So, kiddo, he said to me, putting his hands on my shoulders. Think about what you've done, okay? And have a great holiday. Happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa.
I wiped my nose with my sleeve and started walking out the door.
Say thank you to Mr. Tushman, said Mom, tapping my shoulder.
I stopped and turned around, but I couldn't look at him.
Thank you, Mr. Tushman, I said.
Bye, Jack, he answered. Then I walked out the door.
Season's greetings.
Weirdly enough, when we got back home and Mom brought in the mail, there were holiday cards from both Julian's family and August's family. Julian's holiday card was a picture of Julian wearing a tie, looking like he was about to go to the opera or something. August's holiday card was of a cute old dog wearing reindeer antlers, a red nose, and red booties. There was a cartoon bubble above the dog's head that read, Ho, ho, ho. On the inside of the card, it read, To the Will family. Peace on Earth. Love, Nate, Isabel, Olivia, August, and Daisy.
Cute card, huh? I said to Mom, who had hardly said a word to me all the way home. I think she honestly just didn't know what to say.
That must be their dog, I said.
Do you want to tell me what's going on inside your head, Jack?
She answered me seriously.
I bet you they put a picture of their dog on the card every year, I said.
She took the card from my hands and looked at the picture carefully. Then she raised her eyebrows and her shoulders and gave me back the card.
We're very lucky, Jack. There's so much we take for granted.
I know, I said. I knew what she was talking about without her having to say it.
I heard that Julian's mom actually photoshopped August's face out of the class picture when she got it. She gave a copy to a couple of the other moms.
That's just awful, said Mom. People are just... they're not always so great.
I know.
Is that why you hit Julian?
No.
And then I told her why I punched Julian. And I told her that August was my ex-friend now. And I told her about Halloween.
Letters, emails, Facebook, texts. December 18th. Dear Mr. Tushman, I am very, very sorry for punching Julian. It was very, very wrong for me to do that. I am writing a letter to him to tell him that, too. If it's okay, I would really rather not tell you why I did what I did, because it doesn't really make it right anyway. Also, I would rather not make Julian get in trouble for having said something he should not have said. Very sincerely, Jack Will. December 18th. Dear Julian, I am very, very, very sorry for hitting you. It was wrong of me. I hope you are okay. I hope your grown-up tooth grows in fast. Mine always do. Sincerely, Jack Will. December 26th. Dear Jack, thank you so much for your letter. One thing I've learned after being a middle school director for 20 years, there are almost always more than two sides to every story. Although I don't know the details, I have an inkling about what may have sparked the confrontation with Julian. While nothing justifies striking another student, ever, I also know good friends are sometimes worth defending. This has been a tough year for a lot of students, as the first year of middle school usually is. Keep up the good work, and keep being the fine boy we all know you are. All the best, Lawrence Tushman, Middle School Director. To ltushman@beecherschool.edu, cc, johnwill@phillipsacademy.edu, amandawill@copperbeach.org, from melissa.albans@rmail.com, subject, Jack Will. Dear Mr. Tushman, I spoke with Amanda and John Will yesterday, and they have expressed their regret at Jack's having punched our son, Julian, in the mouth. I am writing to let you know that my husband and I support your decision to allow Jack to return to Beecher Prep after a two-day suspension. Although I think hitting a child would be valid grounds for expulsion in other schools, I agree such extreme measures aren't warranted here. We have known the Will family since our boys were in kindergarten and are confident that every measure will be taken to ensure this doesn't happen again. To that end, I wonder if Jack's unexpectedly violent behavior might have been a result of too much pressure being placed on his young shoulders. I am speaking specifically of the new child with special needs who both Jack and Julian were asked to befriend. In retrospect, and having now seen the child in question at various school functions and in the class pictures, I think it may have been too much to ask of our children to be able to process all that. Certainly, when Julian mentioned he was having a hard time befriending the boy, we told him he was off the hook in that regard. We think the transition to middle school is hard enough without having to place greater burdens or hardships on these young, impressionable minds. I should also mention that as a member of the school board, I was a little disturbed that more consideration was not given during this child's application process to the fact that Beecher Prep is not an inclusion school. There are many parents, myself included, who question the decision to let this child into our school at all. At the very least, I am somewhat troubled that this child was not held to the same stringent application standards, i.e. interview, that the rest of the incoming middle school students were. Best, Melissa Perper Albans. To melissa.albans@rmail.com, from ltushman@beecherschool.edu, cc johnwill@phillipsacademy.edu, amandawill@copperbeach.org, subject, Jack Will. Dear Mrs. Albans, thank you for your email outlining your concerns. Were I not convinced that Jack Will is extremely sorry for his actions, and were I not confident that he would not repeat those actions, rest assured that I would not be allowing him back to Beecher Prep. As for your other concerns regarding our new student, August, please note that he does not have special needs. He is neither disabled, handicapped, nor developmentally delayed in any way, so there was no reason to assume anyone would take issue with his admittance to Beecher Prep. Whether it is an inclusion school or not. In terms of the application process, the admissions director and I both felt it within our right to hold the interview off-site at August's home for reasons that are obvious. We felt that this slight break in protocol was warranted, but in no way prejudicial, in one way or another, to the application review. August is an extremely good student and has secured the friendship of some truly exceptional young people, including Jack Will. At the beginning of the school year, when I enlisted certain children to be a welcoming committee to August, I did so as a way of easing his transition into a school environment. I did not think asking these children to be especially kind to a new student would place any extra burdens or hardships on them. In fact, I thought it would teach them a thing or two about empathy and friendship and loyalty. As it turns out, Jack Will didn't need to learn any of these virtues. He already had them in abundance. Thank you again for being in touch. Sincerely, Lawrence Tushman. To melissa.albans@rmail.com, from johnwill@phillipsacademy.edu, cc ltushman@beecherschool.edu, amandawill@copperbeach.org, subject, Jack. Hi, Melissa. Thank you for being so understanding about this incident with Jack. He is, as you know, extremely sorry for his actions. I hope you do accept our offer to pay Julian's dental bills. We are very touched by your concern regarding Jack's friendship with August. Please know we have asked Jack if he felt any undue pressure about any of this, and the answer was a resolute no. He enjoys August's company and feels like he has made a good friend. Hope you have a happy new year, John and Amanda Will. Hi, August. Jackalope Will wants to be friends with you on Facebook. Jackalope Will, 32 Mutual Friends. Thanks, the Facebook team. To augiedoggiepullman at email.com. Subject, sorry. Message. Hey, August. It's me, Jack Will. I noticed I'm not on your friends list anymore. Hope you friend me again, 'cause I'm really sorry. I just wanted to say that. Sorry. I know why you're mad at me now. I'm sorry I didn't mean the stuff I said. I was so stupid. I hope you can forgive me. Hope we can be friends again. Jack. One new text message from August, December 31st, 4:47 p.m. Got your message. You know why I'm mad at you now? Did Summer tell you? One new text message from Jack Will, December 31st, 4:49 p.m. She told me bleeding scream as hint, but didn't get it at first. Then I remember seeing bleeding scream in homeroom on Halloween. Didn't know it was you, thought you were coming as Boba Fett. One new text message from August, December 31st, 4:51 p.m. I changed my mind at the last minute. Did you really punch Julian? One new text message from Jack Will, December 31st, 4:54 p.m. Yeah, I punched him, knocked out a tooth in the back, a baby tooth. One new text message from August, December 31st, 4:55 p.m. Why'd you punch him? One new text message from Jack Will, December 31st, 4:56 p.m. I don't know. One new text message from August, December 31st, 4:58 p.m. Liar. I bet he said something about me, right? One new text message from Jack Will, December 31st, 5:02 p.m. He's a jerk, but I was a jerk too. Really, really, really sorry for what I said, dude, okay? Can we be friends again? One new text message from August, December 31st, 5:03 p.m. Okay. One new text message from Jack Will, December 31st, 5:04 p.m. Awesome! One new text message from August, December 31st, 5:06 p.m. But tell me the truth, okay? Would you really want to kill yourself if you were me? One new text message from Jack Will, December 31st, 5:08 p.m. No! I swear on my life, but dude, I would want to kill myself if I were Julian. Smiley face. One new text message from August, December 31st, 5:10 p.m. LOL. Yes, dude, we're friends again. Back from winter break. Despite what Tushman said, there was no clean slate when I went back to school in January. In fact, things were totally weird from the second I got to my locker in the morning. I'm next to Amos, who's always been a pretty straight-up kid, and I was like, yo, what up? And he basically just nodded a half hello and closed his locker door and left. I was like, okay, that was bizarre. And then I said, hey, what up? To Henry, who didn't even bother half smiling, but just looked away. Okay, so something's up. Dissed by two people in less than 5 minutes. Not that anyone's counting. I thought I'd try one more time with Tristan, and boom, same thing. He actually looked nervous, like he was afraid of talking to me. I've got a form of the plague now, is what I thought. This is Julian's payback. And that's pretty much how it went all morning. Nobody talked to me. Not true. The girls were totally normal with me, and August talked to me, of course, and actually, I have to say, both Maxes said hello, which made me feel kind of bad for never, ever hanging out with them in the 5 years I've been in their class. I hoped lunch would be better, but it wasn't. I sat down at my usual table with Luca and Isaiah. I guess I thought since they weren't in this super popular group, but were kind of middle-of-the-road jock kids, that I'd be safe with them. but they barely nodded when I said hello. Then, when our table was called, they got their lunches and never came back. I saw them find a table way over at the other end of the cafeteria. They weren't at Julian's table, but they were near him, like on the fringe of popularity. So, anyway, I'd been ditched. I knew table switching was something that happened in the fifth grade, but I never thought it would happen to me. It felt really awful being at the table by myself. I felt like everyone was watching me. It also made me feel like I had no friends. I decided to skip lunch and go read in the library. The War. It was Charlotte who had the inside scoop on why everyone was dissing me. I found a note inside my locker at the end of the day. "Meet me in room 301 right after school. Come by yourself. Charlotte." She was already inside the room when I walked in. "Sup?" I said. "Hey," she said. She went over to the door, looked left and right, and then closed the door and locked it from the inside. Then she turned to face me and started biting her nail as she talked.
"Look, I feel bad about what's going on, and I just wanted to tell you what I know. Promise you won't tell anyone I talk to you?"
"Promise."
"So, Julian had this huge holiday party over winter break," she said. "I mean, huge. My sister's friend had had her sweet 16 at the same place last year. There were like 200 people there. So, I mean, it's a huge place."
"Yeah, and?"
"Yeah, and, well, pretty much everybody in the whole grade was there."
"Not everybody," I joked.
"Right, not everybody,
duh.
But like, even parents were there, you know? Like, my parents were there. You know Julian's mom is the vice president of the school board, right? So she knows a lot of people. Anyway, so basically what happened at the party was that Julian went around telling everyone that you punched him because you had emotional problems."
"What?"
"And that you would have gotten expelled, but his parents begged the school not to expel you."
"What?"
"And that none of it would have happened in the first place if Tushman hadn't forced you to be friends with Augie. He said his mom thinks that you, quote unquote, snapped under the pressure."
I couldn't believe what I was hearing. "No one bought into that, right?" I said. She shrugged.
"That's not even the point. The point is, he's really popular. And, you know, my mom heard that his mom is actually pushing the school to review Augie's application to Beecher."
"Can she do that?"
"It's about Beecher not being an inclusion school. That's a type of school that mixes normal kids with special needs."
"That's just stupid. Augie doesn't have special needs."
"Yeah, but she's saying that if the school is changing the way they usually do things in some ways..."
"But they're not changing anything."
"Yeah, they did. Didn't you notice they changed the theme of the New Year art show? In past years, fifth graders painted self-portraits, but this year they made us do those ridiculous self-portraits as animals, remember?"
"So? Big friggin' deal."
"I know. I'm not saying I agree. I'm just saying that's what she's saying."
"I know, I know. It's just so messed up."
"I know. Anyway, Julian said that he thinks being friends with Augie is bringing you down, and that for your own good, you need to stop hanging out with him so much. And if you start losing all your old friends, it'll be like a big wake-up call. So basically, for your own good, he's going to stop being your friend completely."
Newsflash, I stopped being his friend completely first.
"Yeah, but he's convinced all the boys to stop being your friend. For your own good. That's why nobody's talking to you."
"You're talking to me."
"Yeah, well, this is more of a boy thing," she explained. "The girls are staying neutral. Except Savannah's group, because they're going out with Julian's group. But to everybody else, this is really a boy war."
I nodded. She tilted her head to one side and pouted like she felt sorry for me.
"Is it okay that I told you all this?" she said.
"Yeah, of course. I don't care who talks to me or not," I lied. This is all just so dumb. She nodded. Hey, does Augie know any of this?
Of course not. At least not from me.
And Summer?
I don't think so. Look, I better go. Just so you know, my mom thinks Julian's mom is a total idiot. She said she thinks people like her are more concerned about what their kids' class pictures look like than doing the right thing. You heard about the photoshopping, right?
Yeah, that was just sick.
Totally, she answered, nodding. Anyway, I better go. I just wanted you to know what was up and stuff.
Thanks, Charlotte.
I'll let you know if I hear anything else, she said.
Before she went out, she looked left and right outside the door to make sure no one saw her leaving. I guess even though she was neutral, she didn't want to be seen with me. Switching tables.
The next day at lunch, stupid me, I sat down at a table with Tristan, Nino, and Pablo.
I thought maybe they were safe because they weren't really considered popular, but they weren't out there playing D&D at recess either. They were sort of in-betweeners. And at first, I thought I scored because they were basically too nice to not acknowledge my presence when I walked over to the table. They all said, hey, though I could tell they looked at each other. But then the same thing happened that happened yesterday. Our lunch table was called, they got their food, and then headed toward a new table on the other side of the cafeteria. Unfortunately, Mrs. G, who was the lunch teacher that day, saw what happened and chased after them.
That's not allowed, boys, she scolded them loudly. This is not that kind of school. You get right back to your table.
Oh, great. Like that was gonna help. Before they could be forced to sit back down at the table, I got up with my tray and walked away really fast. I could hear Mrs. G call my name, but I pretended not to hear and just kept walking to the other side of the cafeteria behind the lunch counter.
Sit with us, Jack.
It was Summer. She and August were sitting at their table, and they were both waving me over.
Why I didn't sit with August the first day of school. Okay, I'm a total hypocrite, I know. That very first day of school, I remember seeing August in the cafeteria. Everybody was looking at him, talking about him. Back then, no one was used to his face or even knew that he was coming to Beecher, so it was a total shocker for a lot of people to see him there on the first day of school. Most kids were even afraid to get near him. So, when I saw him going into the cafeteria ahead of me, I knew he'd have no one to sit with, but I just couldn't bring myself to sit with him. I'd been hanging out with him all morning long because we had so many classes together, and I guess I was just kind of wanting a little normal time to chill with other kids. So when I saw him move to a table on the other side of the lunch counter, I purposefully found a table as far away from there as I could find. I sat down with Isaiah and Luca, even though I'd never met them before, and we talked about baseball the whole time, and I played basketball with them at recess. They became my lunch table from then on. I heard Summer had sat down with August, which surprised me because I knew for a fact she wasn't one of the kids that Tushman had talked to about being friends with Augie, so I knew she was doing it just to be nice, and that was pretty brave, I thought. So now here I sit with Summer and August, and they were being totally nice to me as always. I filled them in about everything Charlotte had told me, except for the whole big part about my having snapped under the pressure of being Augie's friend, or the part about Julian's mom saying that Augie had special needs, or the part about the school board. I guess all I really told them about was how Julian had had a holiday party and managed to turn the whole grade against me. It just feels so weird, I said, to not have people talking to you, pretending you don't even exist. Augie started smiling.
You think? He said sarcastically.
Welcome to my world.
Sides.
So here are the official sides, said Summer at lunch the next day. She pulled out a folded piece of loose leaf paper and opened it. It had three columns of names.
Jack's side. Jack, August, Reed, Max G, Max W.
Julian's side. Miles, Henry, Amos, Simon, Tristan, Pablo, Nino, Isaiah, Luca, Jake, Toland, Roman, Ben, Emmanuel, Zeke, Tommaso.
Neutrals. Malik, Remo, Jose, Leaf, Ram, Ivan, Russell.
Where did you get this? Said Augie, looking over my shoulder as I read the list.
Charlotte made it, Summer answered quickly. She gave it to me last period. She said she thought you should know who was on your side, Jack.
Yeah, not many people, that's for sure, I said.
Reed is, she said, and the two Maxes.
Great, the nerds are on my side.
Don't be mean, said Summer. I think Charlotte likes you, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
Are you going to ask her out?
Are you kidding? I can't, now that everybody's acting like I have the plague.
The second I said it, I realized I shouldn't have said it. There was this awkward moment of silence. I looked at Augie.
It's okay, he said. I knew about that.
Sorry, dude, I said.
I didn't know they called it the plague, though, he said. I figured it was more like the cheese touch or something.
Oh, yeah, like in Diary of a Wimpy Kid, I nodded.
The plague actually sounds cooler, he joked. Like someone could catch the Black Death of ugliness.
As he said this, he made air quotes. I think it's awful, said Summer.
But Augie shrugged while taking a big sip from his juice box.
Anyway, I'm not asking Charlotte out, I said.
My mom thinks we're all too young to be dating anyway, she answered.
What if Reed asked you out? I said. Would you go?
I could tell she was surprised.
No, she said. I'm just asking, I laughed.
She shook her head and smiled. Why? What do you know?
Nothing, I'm just asking, I said.
I actually agree with my mom, she said. I do think we're too young to be dating. I mean, I just don't see what the rush is.
Yeah, I agree, said August. Which is kind of a shame, you know, what with all those babes who keep throwing themselves at me and stuff.
He said this in such a funny way that the milk I was drinking came out of my nose when I laughed, which made us all totally crack up.
August's house.
It was already the middle of January, and we still hadn't even chosen what science fair project we were going to work on. I guess I kept putting it off because I just didn't want to do it. Finally, August was like, dude, we have to do this. So we went to his house after school. I was really nervous because I didn't know if August had ever told his parents about what we now called the Halloween incident. Turns out the dad wasn't even home and the mom was out running errands. I'm pretty sure from the 2 seconds I'd spent talking to her that Augie had never mentioned a thing about it. She was super cool and friendly toward me. When I first walked into Augie's room, I was like, whoa, Augie, you have got a serious Star Wars addiction. He had ledges full of Star Wars miniatures and a huge The Empire Strikes Back poster on his wall.
I know, right? He laughed.
He sat down on a rolling chair next to his desk, and I plopped down on a beanbag chair in the corner. That's when his dog waddled into the room, right up to me.
He was on your holiday card,
I said, letting the dog sniff my hand.
She, he corrected me. Daisy. You can pet her. She doesn't bite.
When I started petting her, she basically rolled over onto her back.
She wants you to rub her tummy, said August.
Okay, this is the cutest dog I've ever seen, I said, rubbing her stomach.
I know, right? She's the best dog in the world, aren't you, girly?
As soon as she heard August's voice say that, the dog started wagging her tail and went over to him.
Who's my little girly? Who's my little girly?
August was saying as she licked him all over the face.
I wish I had a dog, I said.
My parents think our apartment's too small. I started looking around at the stuff in his room while he turned on the computer.
Hey, you've got an Xbox 360? Can we play?
Dude, we're here to work on the science fair project.
Do you have Halo?
Of course I have Halo.
Please, can we play?
He had logged on to the Beecher website and was now scrolling down Miss Rubin's teacher page through the list of science fair projects.
Can you see from there?
He said. I sighed and went to sit on a little stool that was right next to him.
Cool iMac, I said.
What kind of computer do you have?
Dude, I don't even have my own room, much less my own computer. My parents have this ancient Dell that's practically dead.
Okay. How about this one?
He said, turning the screen in my direction so I would look. I made a quick scan of the screen and my eyes literally started blurring.
Making a sun clock, he said. That sounds kind of cool.
I leaned back. Can't we just make a volcano?
Everyone makes volcanoes.
Duh, because it's easy, I said, petting Daisy again.
What about how to make crystal spikes out of Epsom salt?
Sounds boring, I answered. So, why'd you call her Daisy?
He didn't look up from the screen.
My sister named her. I wanted to call her Darth. Actually, technically speaking, her full name is Darth Daisy, but we never really called her that.
Darth Daisy? That's funny. Hi, Darth Daisy, I said to the dog, who rolled onto her back again for me to rub her tummy.
Okay, this one is the one,
said August, pointing to a picture on the screen of a bunch of potatoes with wires poking out of them.
How to build an organic battery made of potatoes. Now that's cool. It says here you could power a lamp with it. We could call it the Spud Lamp or something. What do you think?
Dude, that sounds way too hard. You know I suck at science.
Shut up, you do not.
Yeah, I do. I got a 54 on my last test. I suck at science.
No, you don't. And that was only because we were still fighting and I wasn't helping you. I can help you now. This is a good project, Jack. We've got to do it.
Fine, whatever, I shrugged.
Just then, there was a knock on the door. A teenage girl with long, dark, wavy hair poked her head inside the door. She wasn't expecting to see me.
Oh, hey, she said to both of us.
Hey, Via, said August, looking back at the computer screen. Via, this is Jack. Jack, that's Via.
Hey,
I said, nodding hello.
Hey, she said, looking at me carefully.
I knew the second Augie said my name that he had told her about the stuff I had said about him. I could tell from the way she looked at me. In fact, the way she looked at me made me think she remembered me from that day at Carvel on Amesford Avenue all those years ago.
Augie, I have a friend I want you to meet, okay? She said. He's coming over in a few minutes.
Is he your new boyfriend?
August teased. Via kicked the bottom of his chair.
Just be nice, she said and left the room.
Dude, your sister's hot, I said.
I know. She hates me, right? You told her about the Halloween incident?
Yeah.
Yeah, she hates me, or yeah, you told her about Halloween?
Both.
The boyfriend. 2 minutes later, the sister came back with this guy named Justin. Seemed like a cool enough dude. Longish hair, little round glasses. He was carrying a big, long, shiny silver case that ended in a sharp point on one end.
Justin, this is my little brother, August, said Via. And that's Jack.
Hey, guys,
said Justin, shaking our hands. He seemed a little nervous. I guess maybe it was because he was meeting August for the first time. Sometimes I forget what a shock it is the first time you meet him.
Cool room. Are you Via's boyfriend?
Augie asked mischievously, and his sister pulled his cap down over his face.
What's in your case? I said. A machine gun?
Ha, answered the boyfriend. That's funny. No, it's a... fiddle.
Justin's a fiddler, said Via. He's in a Zydeco band.
What the heck is a Zydeco band?
Said Augie, looking at me.
It's a type of music, said Justin.
like Creole music.
What's Creole? I said.
You should tell people that's a machine gun, said Augie. Nobody would ever mess with you.
Ha, I guess you're right, Justin said, nodding and tucking his hair behind his ears. Creole's the kind of music they play in Louisiana, he said to me.
Are you from Louisiana? I asked.
No, he answered, pushing up his glasses. I'm from Brooklyn. I don't know why this made me want to laugh.
Come on, Justin, said Via, pulling him by the hand. Let's go hang out in my room.
Okay, see you guys later. Bye, he said.
Bye.
Bye.
As soon as they left the room, Augie looked at me, smiling.
I'm from Brooklyn,
I said, and we both started laughing hysterically. Part 5. Justin. Sometimes I think my head is so big because it's so full of dreams. John Merrick in Bernard Pomerantz's The Elephant Man. Olivia's brother. The first time I met Olivia's little brother, I have to admit, I'm totally taken by surprise. I shouldn't be, of course. Olivia's told me about his syndrome, even has described what he looks like. But she's also talked about all his surgeries over the years, so I guess I assumed he'd be more normal-looking by now. Like, when a kid is born with a cleft palate and has plastic surgery to fix it, sometimes you can't even tell except for the little scar above the lip. I guess I thought her brother would have some scars here and there, but not this. I definitely wasn't expecting to see this little kid in a baseball cap who's sitting in front of me right now. Actually, there are two kids sitting in front of me. One is a totally normal-looking kid with curly blonde hair named Jack. The other is Augie. I like to think I'm able to hide my surprise. I hope I do. Surprise is one of those emotions that can be hard to fake, though, whether you're trying to look surprised when you're not, or trying to not look surprised when you are. I shake his hand. I shake the other kid's hand. I don't want to focus on his face. Cool room, I say. Are you Via's boyfriend? He says. I think he's smiling. Olivia pushes down his baseball cap. Is that a machine gun? The blonde kid asks, like I haven't heard that one before. And we talk about Zydeco for a bit, and then Via's taking my hand and leading me out of the room. As soon as we close the door behind us, we hear them laughing. I'm from Brooklyn, one of them sings. Olivia rolls her eyes as she smiles. Let's go hang out in my room, she says. We've been dating for 2 months now. I knew from the moment I saw her, the minute she sat down at our table in the cafeteria, that I liked her. I couldn't keep my eyes off of her. Really beautiful, with olive skin and the bluest eyes I've ever seen in my life. At first, she acted like she only wanted to be friends. I think she kind of gives off that vibe without even meaning to. Stay back. Don't even bother. She doesn't flirt like some other girls do. She looks you right in the eye when she talks to you, like she's daring you. So I just kept looking her right in the eye, too, like I was daring her right back. And then I asked her out, and she said yes, which rocked. She's an awesome girl, and I love hanging out with her. She didn't tell me about August until her third date. I think she used the phrase a craniofacial abnormality to describe his face. Or maybe it was craniofacial anomaly. I know the one word she didn't use was deformed, though, because that word would have registered with me. So what did you think? She asks me nervously the second we're inside her room. Are you shocked?
No, I lie. She smiles and looks away. You're shocked. I'm not, I assure her. He's just like what you said he'd be. She nods and plops down on her bed. Kind of cute how she still has a lot of stuffed animals on her bed. She takes one of them, a polar bear, without thinking, and puts it in her lap. I sit down on the rolling chair by her desk. Her room is immaculate. When I was little, she says, there were lots of kids who never came back for a second playdate. I mean, lots of kids.
I even had friends who wouldn't come to my birthdays because he would be there. They never actually told me this, but it would get back to me. Some people just don't know how to deal with Augie, you know? I nod. It's not even like they know they're being mean, she adds. They were just scared. I mean, let's face it, his face is a little scary, right? I guess, I answer. But you're okay with it? She asks me sweetly. You're not too freaked out or scared? I'm not freaked out or scared. I smile. She nods and looks down at the polar bear on her lap. I can't tell whether she believes me or not, but then she gives the polar bear a kiss on the nose and tosses it to me with a little smile. I think that means she believes me, or at least that she wants to. Valentine's Day. I give Olivia a heart necklace for Valentine's Day, and she gives me a messenger bag she's made out of old floppy disks. Very cool how she makes things like that. Earrings out of pieces of circuit boards, dresses out of t-shirts, bags out of old jeans. She's so creative. I tell her she should be an artist someday, but she wants to be a scientist. A geneticist of all things. She wants to find cures for people like her brother, I guess. We make plans for me to finally meet her parents. A Mexican restaurant on Amesford Avenue near her house on Saturday night. All day long, I'm nervous about it, and when I get nervous, my tics come out. I mean, my tics are always there, but they're not like they used to be when I was little. Nothing but a few hard blinks now, the occasional head pull. But when I'm stressed, they get worse, and I'm definitely stressing about meeting her folks. They're waiting inside when I get to the restaurant. The dad gets up and shakes my hand, and the mom gives me a hug. I give Augie a hello fist punch and kiss Olivia on the cheek before I sit down. It's so nice to meet you, Justin. We've heard so much about you. Her parents couldn't be nicer. Put me at ease right away. The waiter brings over the menus, and I notice his expression the moment he lays eyes on August, but I pretend not to notice. I guess we're all pretending not to notice things tonight. The waiter, my tics, the way August crushes the tortilla chips on the table and spoons the crumbs into his mouth. I look at Olivia, and she smiles at me. She knows. She sees the waiter's face. She sees my tics. Olivia is a girl who sees everything. We spend the entire dinner talking and laughing. Olivia's parents ask me about my music, how I got into the fiddle and stuff like that. And I tell them about how I used to play classical violin, but I got into Appalachian folk music and then Zydeco. And they're listening to every word, like they're really interested. They tell me to let them know the next time my band's playing a gig so they can come listen. I'm not used to all the attention, to be truthful. My parents don't have a clue about what I want to do with my life. They never ask. We never talk like this. I don't think they even know I traded my Baroque violin for an 8-string Hardanger fiddle 2 years ago. After dinner, we go back to Olivia's for some ice cream. Their dog greets us at the door. An old dog. Super sweet. She'd thrown up all over the hallway, though. Olivia's mom rushes to get paper towels while the dad picks the dog up like she's a baby. "What's up, old girlie?" he says. And the dog's in heaven, tongue hanging out, tail wagging, legs in the air at awkward angles. "Dad, tell Justin how you got Daisy," says Olivia. "Yeah," says Augie. The dad smiles and sits down in a chair with the dog still cradled in his arms. It's obvious he's told this story lots of times, and they all love to hear it. "So I'm coming home from the subway one day," he says, "and a homeless guy I've never seen in this neighborhood before is pushing this floppy mutt in a stroller. And he comes up to me and says, 'Hey, mister, want to buy my dog?' And without even thinking about it, I say, 'Sure, how much you want?' And he says, $10. So I give him the $20 I have in my wallet, and he hands me the dog. Justin, I'm telling you, you've never smelled anything so bad in your life. She stank so much, I can't even tell you. So I took her right from there to the vet down the street, and then I brought her home."
This is the end of disc number 4. Please insert disc number 5. This is disc number 5.
Hey, mister, wanna buy my dog? And without even thinking about it, I say, sure, how much you want? And he says, $10. So I give him the $20 I have in my wallet, and he hands me the dog.
Justin, I'm telling you, you've never smelled anything so bad in your life. She stank so much, I can't even tell you. So I took her right from there to the vet down the street, and then I brought her home.
Didn't even call me first, by the way, the mom interjects as she cleans the floor, to see if I'm okay with his bringing home some homeless guy's dog. The dog actually looks over at the mom when she says this, like she understands everything everyone is saying about her. She's a happy dog, like she knows she lucked out that day finding this family. I kind of know how she feels. I like Olivia's family. They laugh a lot. My family's not like this at all. My mom and dad got divorced when I was 4, and they pretty much hate each other. I grew up spending half of every week in my dad's apartment in Chelsea, and the other half in my mom's place in Brooklyn Heights. I have a half-brother who's 5 years older than me and barely knows I exist. For as long as I can remember, I felt like my parents could hardly wait for me to be old enough to take care of myself. You can go to the store by yourself. Here's the key to the apartment. It's funny how there's a word like overprotective to describe some parents, but no word that means the opposite. What word do you use to describe parents who don't protect enough? Underprotective? Neglectful? Self-involved? Lame? All of the above. Olivia's family tell each other, I love you, all the time. I can't remember the last time anyone in my family said that to me. By the time I go home, my tics have all stopped. Our Town. We're doing the play Our Town for the spring show this year. Olivia dares me to try out for the lead role, the stage manager, and somehow I get it. Total fluke. Never got any lead roles in anything before. I tell Olivia she brings me good luck. Unfortunately, she doesn't get the female lead, Emily Gibbs. The pink-haired girl named Miranda gets it. Olivia gets a bit part and is also the Emily understudy. I'm actually more disappointed than Olivia is. She almost seems relieved. I don't love people staring at me, she says, which is sort of strange coming from such a pretty girl. A part of me thinks maybe she blew her audition on purpose. The spring show is at the end of April. It's mid-March now, so that's less than 6 weeks to memorize my part, plus rehearsal time, plus practicing with my band, plus finals, plus spending time with Olivia. It's going to be a rough 6 weeks, that's for sure.
Mr. Davenport, the drama teacher, is already manic about the whole thing. Will drive us crazy by the time it's over, no doubt.
I heard through the grapevine that he'd been planning on doing The Elephant Man, but changed it to Our Town at the last minute, and that change took a week off of our rehearsal schedule. Not looking forward to the craziness of the next month and a half. Ladybug. Olivia and I are sitting on her front stoop. She's helping me with my lines. It's a warm March evening, almost like summer. The sky is still bright cyan, but the sun is low and the sidewalks are streaked with long shadows. I'm reciting, yes, the sun's come up over 1,000 times. Summers and winters have cracked the mountains a little bit more, and the rains have brought down some of the dirt. Some babies that weren't even born before have begun talking regular sentences already. And a number of people who thought they were right young and spry have noticed that they can't bound up a flight of stairs like they used to, without their heart fluttering a little. I shake my head. I can't remember the rest. All that can happen in 1,000 days, Olivia prompts me, reading from the script. Right, 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 I say, shaking my head. I sigh. I'm wiped, Olivia. How the heck am I going to remember all these lines? You will, she answers confidently. She reaches out and cups her hands over a ladybug that appears out of nowhere. See? A good luck sign, she says, slowly lifting her top hand to reveal the ladybug walking on the palm of her other hand. Good luck or just the hot weather, I joke. Of course good luck, she answers, watching the ladybug crawl up her wrist. There should be a thing about making a wish on a ladybug. Augie and I used to do that with fireflies when we were little. She cups her hands over the ladybug again. Come on, make a wish. Close your eyes. I dutifully close my eyes. A long second passes, then I open them. Did you make a wish? She asks. Yep. She smiles, uncups her hands, and the ladybug, as if on cue, spreads its wings and flits away. Don't you want to know what I wished for? I ask, kissing her. No, she answers shyly, looking up at the sky, which, at this very moment, is the exact color of her eyes. I made a wish, too, she says mysteriously, but she has so many things she could wish for, I have no idea what she's thinking. The bus stop. Olivia's mom, Augie, Jack, and Daisy come down the stoop just as I'm saying goodbye to Olivia, slightly awkward since we're in the middle of a nice long kiss. Hey, guys, says the mom, pretending not to see anything, but the two boys are giggling. Hi, Mrs. Pullman. Please call me Isabel, Justin, she says again. It's like the third time she's told me this, so I really need to start calling her then. I'm heading home, I say, as if to explain. Oh, are you heading to the subway? She says, following the dog with a newspaper. Can you walk Jack to the bus stop? No problem. That okay with you, Jack? The mom asks him, and he shrugs. Justin, can you stay with him till the bus comes? Of course. We all say our goodbyes. Olivia winks at me. You don't have to stay with me, Jack says as we're walking up the block. I take the bus by myself all the time. Augie's mom is way too overprotective. He's got a low, gravelly voice, like a little tough guy. He kind of looks like one of those little rascal kids in the old black and white movies, like he should be wearing a newsboy cap and knickers. We get to the bus stop, and the schedule says the bus will be there in 8 minutes. I'll wait with you, I tell him. Up to you, he shrugs. Can I borrow a dollar? I want some gum. I fish a dollar out of my pocket and watch him cross the street to the grocery store on the corner. He seems too small to be walking around by himself somehow. Then I think how I was that young when I was taking the subway by myself. Way too young. I'm going to be an overprotective dad someday. I know it. My kids are going to know I care. I'm waiting there a minute or two when I notice three kids walking up the block from the other direction. They walk right past the grocery store, but one of them looks inside and nudges the other two. They all back up and look inside. I can tell they're up to no good, all elbowing each other, laughing. One of them is Jack's height, but the other two look much bigger, more like teens. They hide behind the fruit stand in front of the store, and when Jack walks out, they trail behind him, making loud throw-up noises. Jack casually turns around at the corner to see who they are, and they run away, high-fiving each other and laughing. Little jerks. Jack crosses the street like nothing happened and stands next to me at the bus stop, blowing a bubble. Friends of yours? I finally say. Ha, he says. He's trying to smile, but I can see he's upset. Just some jerks from my school, he says. A kid named Julian and his two gorillas, Henry and Miles. Do they bother you like that a lot? No, they've never done that before. They'd never do that in school or they'd get kicked out. Julian lives two blocks from here, so I guess it was just bad luck running into him. Oh, okay, I nod. It's not a big deal, he assures me. We both automatically look down Amesford Avenue to see if the bus is coming. We're sort of in a war, he says after a minute, as if that explains everything. Then he pulls out this crumpled piece of loose-leaf paper from his jean pocket and gives it to me. I unfold it, and it's a list of names in three columns. He's turned the whole grade against me, says Jack. Not the whole grade, I point out, looking down at the list. He leaves me notes in my locker that say stuff like, everybody hates you. You should tell your teacher about that. Jack looks at me like I'm an idiot and shakes his head. Anyway, you have all these neutrals, I say, pointing to the list. If you get them on your side, things will even up a bit. Yeah, well, that's not really gonna happen, he says sarcastically. Why not? He He shoots me another look like I'm absolutely the stupidest guy he's ever talked to in the world.
What?
I say. He shakes his head like I'm hopeless. Let's just say, he says, I'm friends with someone who isn't exactly the most popular kid in the school. Then it hits me. What he's not coming out and saying. August. This is all about his being friends with August. And he doesn't want to tell me because I'm the sister's boyfriend. Yeah, of course. It makes sense. We see the bus coming down Amesford Avenue. Well, just hang in there, I tell him, handing back the paper. Middle school is about as bad as it gets, and then it gets better. Everything will work out. He shrugs and shoves the list back into his pocket. We wave bye when he gets on the bus, and I watch it pull away. When I get to the subway station 2 blocks away, I see the same 3 kids hanging out in front of the bagel place next door. They're still laughing and yuck-yucking each other like they're some kind of gangbangers, little rich boys in expensive skinny jeans acting tough. Don't know what possesses me, but I take my glasses off, put them in my pocket, and tuck my fiddle case under my arm so the pointy side is facing up. I walk over to them, my face scrunched up, mean-looking. They look at me. Laughs dying on their lips when they see me, ice cream cones at odd angles.
Yo, listen up.
Don't mess with Jack, I say really slowly, gritting my teeth, my voice all Clint Eastwood tough guy. Mess with him again, and you will be very, very sorry. And then I tap my fiddle case for effect. Got it? They nod in unison, ice cream dripping onto their hands. Good. I nod mysteriously, then sprint down the subway 2 steps at a time. Rehearsal. The play is taking up most of my time as we get closer to opening night. Lots of lines to remember. Long monologues where it's just me talking. Olivia had this great idea, though, and it's helping. I have my fiddle with me on stage and play it a bit while I'm talking. It's not written that way, but Mr. Davenport thinks it adds an extra folksy element to have the stage manager plucking on a fiddle. And for me, it's so great because whenever I need a second to remember my next line, I just start playing a little Soldier's Joy on my fiddle, and it buys me some time. I've gotten to know the kids in the show a lot better, especially the pink-haired girl who plays Emily. Turns out she's not nearly as stuck up as I thought she was, given the crowd she hangs out with. Her boyfriend's this built jock who's a big deal on the varsity sports circuit at school. It's a whole world that I have nothing to do with, so I'm kind of surprised that this Miranda girl turns out to be kind of nice. One day we're sitting on the floor backstage waiting for the tech guys to fix the main spotlight. So, how long have you and Olivia been dating? She asks out of the blue.
About 4 months now, I say.
Have you met her brother? She says casually. It's so unexpected that I can't hide my surprise.
You know Olivia's brother? I ask.
Via didn't tell you? We used to be good friends. I've known Augie since he was a baby.
Oh, yeah, I think I knew that, I answer. I don't want to let on that Olivia had not told me any of this. I don't want to let on how surprised I am that she called her Via. Nobody but Olivia's family calls her Via. And here this pink-haired girl, who I thought was a stranger, is calling her Via.
Miranda laughs and shakes her head, but she doesn't say anything. There's an awkward silence, and then she starts fishing through her bag and pulls out her wallet. She rifles through a couple of pictures and then hands one to me. It's of a little boy in a park on a sunny day. He's wearing shorts and a t-shirt, and an astronaut helmet that covers his entire head. It was like 100 degrees that day, she says, smiling at the picture. But he wouldn't take that helmet off for anything. He wore it for like 2 years straight, in the winter, in the summer, at the beach. It was crazy.
Yeah, I've seen pictures in Olivia's house.
I'm the one who gave him that helmet, she says. She sounds a little proud of that. She takes the picture and carefully inserts it back into her wallet.
Cool, I answer.
So, you're okay with it? She says, looking at me. I look at her blankly.
Okay with what?
She raises her eyebrows like she doesn't believe me.
You know what I'm talking about, she says, and takes a long drink from her water bottle.
Let's face it, she continues. The universe was not kind to Augie Pullman. Bird. Why didn't you tell me that you and Miranda Navas used to be friends? I say to Olivia the next day. I'm really annoyed at her for not telling me this. It's not a big deal, she answers defensively, looking at me like I'm weird. It is a big deal, I say. I look like an idiot. How could you not tell me? You've always acted like you don't even know her. I don't know her, she answers quickly. I don't know who that pink-haired cheerleader is. The girl I knew was a total dork who collected American Girl dolls. Oh, come on, Olivia. You come on. You could have mentioned it to me at some point, I say quietly, pretending not to notice the big fat tear that's suddenly rolling down her cheek. She shrugs, fighting back bigger tears. It's okay. I'm not mad, I say, thinking the tears are about me. I honestly don't care if you're mad, she says spitefully. Oh, that's real nice, I fire back. She doesn't say anything. The tears are about to come. Olivia, what's the matter? I say. She shakes her head like she doesn't want to talk about it, but all of a sudden, the tears start rolling a mile a minute. I'm sorry, it's not you, Justin. I'm not crying because of you, she finally says through her tears. Then why are you crying? Because I'm an awful person. What are you talking about? She's not looking at me, wiping her tears with the palm of her hand. I haven't told my parents about the show, she says quickly. I shake my head because I don't quite get what she's telling me. That's okay, I say. It's not too late. There are still tickets available. I don't want them to come to the show, Justin, she interrupts impatiently. Don't you see what I'm saying? I don't want them to come. If they come, they'll bring Augie with them, and I just don't feel like... Here she's hit by another round of crying that doesn't let her finish talking. I put my arm around her. I'm an awful person, she says through her tears. You're not an awful person, I say softly. Yes, I am, she sobs. It's just been so nice being in a new school where nobody knows about him, you know? Nobody's whispering about it behind my back. It's just been so nice, Justin. But if he comes to the play, then everyone will talk about it. Everyone will know. I don't know why I'm feeling like this. I swear I've never been embarrassed by him before. I know, I say, soothing her. You're entitled, Olivia. You've dealt with a lot your whole life. Olivia reminds me of a bird sometimes, how her feathers get all ruffled when she's mad. And when she's fragile like this, she's a little lost bird looking for its nest. So I give her my wing to hide under. The universe. I can't sleep tonight. My head is full of thoughts that won't turn off. Lines from my monologues, elements of the periodic table that I'm supposed to be memorizing, theorems I'm supposed to be understanding. Olivia, Augie. Miranda's words keep coming back. The universe was not kind to Augie Pullman. I'm thinking about that a lot and everything it means. She's right about that. The universe was not kind to Augie Pullman. What did that little kid ever do to deserve his sentence? What did the parents do? Or Olivia? She once mentioned that some doctor told her parents that the odds of someone getting the same combination of syndromes that came together to make Augie's face were like 1 in 4 million. So doesn't that make the universe a giant lottery then? You purchase a ticket when you're born, and it's all just random whether you get a good ticket or a bad ticket. It's all just luck. My head swirls on this, but then softer thoughts soothe, like a flatted third on a major chord. No, it's not all random. If it really was all random, the universe would abandon us completely. And the universe doesn't. It takes care of its most fragile creations in ways we can't see. Like with parents who adore you blindly, and a big sister who feels guilty for being human over you, and a little gravelly-voiced kid whose friends have left him over you, and even a pink-haired girl who carries your picture in her wallet. Maybe it is a lottery, but the universe makes it all even out in the end. The universe takes care of all its birds.
Part 6. August. What a piece of work is a man. How noble in reason. How infinite in faculty. In form and moving, how express and admirable. In action, how like an angel. In apprehension, how like a god. The beauty of the world. Shakespeare, Hamlet.
North Pole. The spud lamp was a big hit at the science fair. Jack and I got an A for it. It was the first A Jack got in any class all year long, so he was psyched. All the science fair projects were set up on tables in the gym. It was the same setup as the Egyptian Museum back in December. Except this time, there were volcanoes and molecule dioramas on the tables instead of pyramids and pharaohs. And instead of kids taking our parents around to look at everybody else's artifact, we had to stand by our tables while all the parents wandered around the room and came over to us one by one. Here's the math on that one. 60 kids in the grade equals 60 sets of parents, and doesn't even include grandparents. So that's a minimum of 120 pairs of eyes that find their way over to me. Eyes that aren't as used to me as their kids' eyes are by now. It's like how compass needles always point north. No matter which way you're facing, all those eyes are compasses, and I'm like the North Pole to them. That's why I still don't like school events that include parents. I don't hate them as much as I did at the beginning of the school year. Like the Thanksgiving Sharing Festival? That was the worst one, I think. That was the first time I had to face the parents all at once. The Egyptian Museum came after that, but that one was okay because I got to dress up as a mummy and nobody noticed me. Then came the winter concert, which I totally hated because I had to sing in the chorus. Not only can I not sing at all, but it felt like I was on display. The New Year art show wasn't quite as bad, but it was still annoying. They put up our artwork in the hallways all over the school and had the parents come and check it out. It was like starting school all over again, having unsuspecting adults pass me on the stairway. Anyway, it's not that I care that people react to me. Like I've said a gazillion times, I'm used to that by now. I don't let it bother me. It's like when you go outside and it's drizzling a little, you don't put on boots for a drizzle. You don't even open your umbrella. You walk through it and barely notice your hair getting wet. But when it's a huge gym full of parents, the drizzle becomes like this total hurricane. Everyone's eyes hit you like a wall of water. Mom and Dad hang around my table a lot, along with Jack's parents. It's kind of funny how parents actually end up forming the same little groups their kids form. Like my parents and Jack's, and Summer's mom, all like and get along with each other. And I see Julian's parents hang out with Henry's parents and Miles's parents. And even the two Max's parents hang out together. It's so funny. I told Mom and Dad about it later when we were walking home, and they thought it was a funny observation. I guess it's true that like seeks like, said Mom. The Augie doll. For a while, the war was all we talked about. February was when it was really at its worst. That's when practically nobody was talking to us, and Julian had started leaving notes in our lockers. The notes to Jack were stupid, like, "You stink, Big Cheese, and nobody likes you anymore." I got notes like, "Freak," and another that said, "Get out of our school, orc." Summer thought we should report the notes to Ms. Rubin, who was the middle school dean, or even Mr. Tushman, but we thought that would be like snitching. Anyway, it's not like we didn't leave notes, too, though ours weren't really mean. They were kind of funny and sarcastic. One was, "You're so pretty, Julian. I love you. Will you marry me? Love, Beulah." Another was, "Love your hair. XOX. Beulah. Another was, "You're a babe. Tickle my feet. XO Beulah." Beulah was a made-up person that me and Jack came up with. She had really gross habits, like eating the green stuff in between her toes and sucking on her knuckles. And we figured someone like that would have a real crush on Julian, who looked and acted like someone in a Kidz Bop commercial. There were also a couple of times in February when Julian, Miles, and Henry played tricks on Jack. They didn't play tricks on me, I think because they knew that if they got caught bullying me, it would be big-time trouble for them. Jack, they figured, was an easier target. So one time they stole his gym shorts and played monkey in the middle with them in the locker room. Another time, Miles, who sat next to Jack in homeroom, swiped Jack's worksheet off his desk, crumpled it in a ball, and tossed it to Julian across the room. This wouldn't have happened if Ms. Potosa had been there, of course, but there was a substitute teacher that day, and subs never really know what's going on. Jack was good about this stuff. He never let them see he was upset, though I think sometimes he was. The other kids in the grade knew about the war. Except for Savannah's group, the girls were neutral at first, but by March, they were getting sick of it, and so were some of the boys. Like another time, when Julian was dumping some pencil sharpener shavings into Jack's backpack, Amos, who was usually tight with them, grabbed the backpack out of Julian's hands and returned it to Jack. It was starting to feel like the majority of boys weren't buying into Julian anymore. And a few weeks ago, Julian started spreading this ridiculous rumor that Jack had hired some hitman to get him and Miles and Henry. This lie was so pathetic that people were actually laughing about him behind his back. At that point, any boys who had still been on his side now jumped ship and were clearly neutral. So by the end of March, only Miles and Henry were on Julian's side. And I think even they were getting tired of the war by then. I'm pretty sure everyone stopped playing the plague game behind my back, too. No one really cringes if I bump into them anymore. And people borrow my pencils without acting like the pencil has cooties. People even joke around with me now sometimes. Like the other day, I saw Maya writing a note to Ellie on a piece of ugly doll stationery, and I don't know why. But I just kind of randomly said, "Did you know the guy who created the ugly dolls based them on me?" Maya looked at me with her eyes wide open, like she totally believed me. Then, when she realized I was only kidding, she thought it was the funniest thing in the world. "You are so funny, August," she said. And then she told Ellie and some of the other girls what I had just said, and they all thought it was funny, too. Like, at first they were shocked, but then when they saw I was laughing about it, they knew it was okay to laugh about it too. And the next day, I found a little ugly doll keychain sitting on my chair with a nice little note from Maya that said, "For the nicest Augie doll in the world, XO Maya." 6 months ago, stuff like that would never have happened, but now it happens more and more. Also, people have been really nice about the hearing aids I started wearing. Lobot. Ever since I was little, the doctors told my parents that someday I'd need hearing aids. I don't know why this always freaked me out a bit, maybe because anything to do with my ears bothers me a lot. My hearing was getting worse, but I hadn't told anyone about it. The ocean sound that was always in my head had been getting louder. It was drowning out people's voices like I was underwater. I couldn't hear teachers if I sat in the back of the class, but I knew if I told Mom or Dad about it, I'd end up with hearing aids. And I was hoping I could make it through the fifth grade without having that happen. But then in my annual checkup in October, I flunked the audiology test, and the doctor was like, "Dude, it's time." And he sent me to a special ear doctor who took impressions of my ears. Out of all my features, my ears are the ones I hate the most. They're like tiny closed fists on the side of my face. They're too low on my head, too. They look like squashed pieces of pizza dough sticking out of the top of my neck or something. Okay, maybe I'm exaggerating a little, but I really hate them. When the ear doctor first pulled the hearing aids out for me and Mom to look at, I groaned. I am not wearing that thing, I announced, folding my arms in front of me. I know they probably look kind of big, said the ear doctor, but we had to attach them to the headband because we had no other way of making them so they'd stay in your ears. See, normal hearing aids usually have a part that wraps around the outer ear to hold the inner bud in place. But in my case, since I don't have outer ears, they had to put the earbuds on this heavy-duty headband that was supposed to wrap around the back of my head. I can't wear that, Mom, I whined. You'll hardly notice them, said Mom, trying to be cheerful. They look like headphones. Headphones? Look at them, Mom, I said angrily. I'll look like Lobot. Which one is Lobot? Said Mom calmly. Lobot? The ear doctor smiled as he looked at the headphones and made some adjustments. The Empire Strikes Back? The bald guy with the cool bionic radio transmitter thing that wraps around the back of his skull? I'm drawing a blank, said Mom. You know Star Wars stuff? I asked the ear doctor. No Star Wars stuff, he answered, slipping the thing over my head. I practically invented Star Wars stuff. He leaned back in his chair to see how the headband fit, and then took it off again. Now, Augie,